Well, as a show, we've lied to you. We told you that we were going to talk to David Dreyer from Pedal the Cause and Qui Tran from Miley and Nudo House. They are coming on the show.
They are.
It's just not happening at 10 o'clock. It's happening at 11. And
we were
operating
in Eastern time.
What happened was, is yes, our producer was operating on Eastern time, even though we were dealing with only Central time guests.
Yeah.
So instead, we've done a thing called a pivot.
Yeah.
It's spelled P-I-V-O-T. Pivot. Uh-huh. So we are pivoting to Brad Young, KMOX legal analyst and partner at Harris Dowell Fisher and Young, as we talk about County Executive Sam Page being investigated by the Attorney General for the misuse of campaign funds, potentially, and having his phone seized by the Missouri State Troopers on Mondays, the whole ordeal that's apparently happening. So Brad Young, legal analyst for KMOX, with us now. How's it going, Brad?
Hey, good morning, Chris.
Brad, we've got lots of questions for you. The first one being, I described the scene on Monday when the Missouri State Highway Patrol arrived at Sam Page's office, to the surprise of everyone, and confiscated his phone. Lots of questions there, but the first being, I didn't know the State Patrol did that. The Highway Patrol did that type of thing, confiscating phones.
Well, State Patrol is certainly empowered to do any investigatory work, which would necessarily include the seizure of evidence. I mean, that's obtaining evidence and seizing evidence is police work 101, and the Missouri State Highway Patrol does that as an arm, an extension of the state government, just as the city police would do that in conjunction with executing a warrant by the city of St. Louis.
Okay, well, that makes a lot of sense, operating for the state. What about the evidence needed? How much evidence, how high is the bar to confiscate a phone of an elected official?
That bar is rather high, because the problem, in other words, the argument against issuing a warrant to confiscate a phone would be that there is tons of information on a phone that would be unrelated to the subject matter at hand. So there would have to be some controls placed on a warrant by the judge to say that although the phone can be confiscated and searched, then at that point, only information related to the basis for the warrant could be made publicly available. And it also raises another issue here too, and that is this. If Sam Page, this is something I've talked about for years, mm-hmm. and that is, what authority does the government have to search your phone? Now, searching your phone ostensibly is no different than searching your car or searching your house, but with one enormous difference. If you have a password protection on your phone, then at that point, the government cannot require you to put in a password, because that would be compelled speech under the First Amendment. All right. So either one of two things has to happen here. Either number one, Sam Page would have no password protection on his phone. I don't think that's the case. Or number two, he voluntarily agreed to provide that password, because look at what would happen if he didn't. All right. Let's look at the PR ramifications. If there's a warrant to search his phone and Sam Page says, well, I'll give you my phone, but you cannot compel me to give you my password. What does that look like from a public relations standpoint? It looks awful, right?
Yeah.
So, well, although I don't know, I'm spitballing here, but I suspect that in conjunction with the warrant to get the phone, Sam Page voluntarily agreed to provide his password for the phone in order to avoid any appearance of impropriety.
So this is related. It's not about Sam Page, but related. I don't know if this is a real world scenario, or if I've just heard of this happening, or people have said this is happening, or I've seen it on TV. I don't know. But if you're not supposed to text and drive, right? And
correct.
I've heard stories of people being pulled over and a cop wants to see the phone and wants you to put your password in to see if you were texting like 2 minutes ago, right? Mm-hmm. Is that, first of all, I don't know if that happens for real. If it does, and you are in your car and they ask you to open your phone so they can see it, are you obligated to do that if you have a password?
Great question, Chris. And it probably, maybe, perhaps a little self-serving for yourself.
No, but I do not. No, no, I
okay,
do not.
Okay, I'm not going to dive into that one.
No, never. I'm
but
very
here's,
safe.
Here's the bottom line. Here's the bottom line. The police can ask you anything they want. It's legal. I always get that question. Is it legal for the police to ask to see your phone? Absolutely. It's legal for the cops to pull you over and say, hey, I'd like to see that dead body in your trunk. Okay, there's nothing illegal about asking. The only question is, are you legally required to comply? And the answer to that with the phone is absolutely no. And so here's what, there's been several instances, even here in the St. Louis area, where there was a police officer accused of taking nude photographs off of a female's phone during a traffic stop.
Was it Ferguson, wasn't it?
Correct. It was. All right. And the problem with this is the following. Most of us, including me, I have my insurance card on my phone on an app. So when the police officer pulls you over and says, I want to see your phone, I want to see your proof of insurance, most people just give them the phone. Mm-hmm. That is a terrible idea.
Right.
Because once they have your phone and it's unlocked, everything is fair game. Just like if you said to the police officer, they say, I want to search your trunk. Sure. Then they can search every square inch of your trunk because you've given permission, right? So the idea then is if the police officer wants to see your insurance card and it's on your phone, you do a screenshot of it and you ask the police officer, what's your cell number? And I will text this to you. That way you're complying with the requirement to produce proof of insurance, but you're not giving up your phone. Back to your question, Chris, if someone is pulled over for texting and driving and the cop says, I want to see your phone, there's a simple answer to that. You know, I really don't want to give up my phone, and I'm choosing not to do so. And the police then would have to go out and get a warrant to search your phone. But then we're back to the same issue that I said before. The warrant can empower the police to access your phone. But if you have a password protection on the phone, the warrant cannot compel you to put in your password because that is compelled speech that's prohibited by the First Amendment.
Okay, so Brad, back to then Sam Page's phone. A phone is not necessarily connected to using taxpayer funds for an informational pamphlet being sent out before the election. So what kind of evidence would there need to be, and where could it possibly come from where the state patrol said the phone is what we need?
Okay. And of course, I want to make sure that I'm very clear here is that I'm estimating and I'm guesstimating. We don't have any hard information of any kind on this. So I want to give that as a disclaimer. But here's what I suspect. I suspect that there's some evidence or an indication that Sam Page was texting individuals to direct how the flyer was worded, to direct how the flyer was to be put together and distributed, and to instruct individuals as to the editing and the content of the flyer that is literally the basis for this entire investigation. And so if his phone was used to do that, then there could be text messages on his phone that would provide that evidence as to whether he controlled or directed the content of the flyer in question.
So I have a general question about having your phone confiscated by authorities for whatever reason. What does a person do in the meantime if they've given up their phone to the FBI or to the Missouri State Patrol or whoever, but they need a phone in the meantime? They might need stuff that's on that phone. And when they ask for the phone, you're not allowed to... give me a second. Give me 10 minutes and I'll give you the phone. You're not allowed to do that, right? You can't just go through because they think you might delete evidence. Isn't that the case? So what do you do then? What does a person do if they have to give up their cell phone?
Well, in this instance, let's walk through how this would work. Since it's my belief that Sam Page would have to voluntarily agree to put in his password, there may have been some negotiations about that. Or in other words, I'm here for your cell phone. But if you're going to voluntarily put in your password, I'll do that in exchange for giving me 5 or 10 minutes under the supervision of the state police to get some important information that I need off my phone before I hand it over to you. I suspect that's what happened. Again, I wasn't in the room, so I don't know. But that's what I would expect to have occurred so that Mr. Page could get off any specific information that he needed off his phone before he handed it over.
do you make anything like in your legal career, legal advice, make anything of the fact that it took 2 full days for Sam Page to make any statement or address what happened from the time the Highway Patrol came to his office on Monday morning to his statement last night at the county council meeting?
Yeah, I suspect that, you know, that's not something you want to go out and say, hey, guess what happened to me today? You know, nobody wants to do that. But what I suspect happens, and we see this very often, is that from a PR perspective, you have 2 options. Number one, get ahead of the story, or number two, try to minimize the fallout of the story from a PR perspective. So we know option A didn't happen. He didn't get out ahead of the story. That would have necessitated him doing something on Monday. He didn't do that. So since he did option B, I can only suspect that he was told that some person with knowledge of the information was going to go public. Maybe it was the attorney general. Maybe it was someone in his office. Maybe it was the state troopers who confiscated the phone. Someone, again, I'm guesstimating here, someone was going to go public with it. So he waited as long as he could until he could make the announcement himself.
And just as a quick follow-up, Ranj, it was in Florissant
where the police officer... Yeah, Brian messaging in on YouTube says it was Florissant where the... there were 2 police officers, I believe, that were stealing nude photos from women they had pulled over. So... Not good.
Not great. Well, Brad, thank you very much for the information on this, because it feels like if the attorney general is taking this action, watching this from a distance, I think, well, he's got to have something, because this is the attorney general of Missouri versus Sam Page, St. Louis County executive, highest ranking Democrat in the state. Things are not going to go well for one of them, depending on how this plays out, right?
Right. Oh, yeah, you're absolutely correct. And listen, here's the other reason why the cell phone, and I gave it some detail about it, but specifically, if all the attorney general had was the flyer itself, and you could make legal conclusions based on the flyer itself, was it political advocacy, which is prohibited under section, I think it's 115 of the Missouri statutes, of using political or public funds for advocacy purposes, all you need is the flyer, right? Mm. But if all you had was the flyer, then Sam Page could take the position, I didn't do anything, it was done without my knowledge, I didn't have any direct control over the wording of the flyer, and he could start to distance himself. So we can speculate here, and again, it's speculation, that the reason the phone is important is to tie Sam Page to the exact wording and editing of the flyer, which would then in turn prevent him from distancing himself from any ramifications of a finding that the flyer itself was political advocacy.
KMOX legal analyst and partner at Harris Dowell Fisher & Young, it is Brad Young with us. We appreciate all the expertise that you bring to us. Thank you so much, Brad.
Always a pleasure, Chris.
That's Brad Young joining the show. And now we know not to hand over your cell phone or put the password in. You don't have to.
Yeah, that's good to know.
The police ask you because you're doing something you shouldn't be doing. You must be committing a crime.
Look, this is how guilty I am. I don't even have any crazy photos on my phone, and I would feel horrified if someone went through my phone. It feels like a violation, even if it's just pictures of Francis, who is precious. Francis is a dog.
Yeah. Just imagining what the most risque photo on your phone would be.
Probably Francis giving me a kiss.
My guess would be like a cotton gin or something. Like you wouldn't have anything really
a
risque.
A cotton gin?
Yeah, like the machine that
like
used
I'm
to...
Like I'm making my own clothes?
Yeah. There's Amy churning butter.
Well, we have an egg beat that we would do, you know, whenever there's big egg news.
Right.
We have our egg beat.
Because egg prices are through the roof.
We need a cow beat.
A cow beat?
Yeah, we do need a cow beat beef prices.
So a beef beat?
A beef beat.
So we're doing the beef beat. Okay, tell us about the beef beat.
This is the beef beat. Moo.
Okay, all right.
And beef now beat. It's time for the beef beat.
Okay. All right.
Beef prices have hit a record high. So beef prices are climbing to historic levels. Whether you are buying them at a restaurant or the grocery store, or if you're the restaurant itself. So a manager of Annie's Burgers in, this doesn't have the state. It's Kearney Mesa? I don't know where that is.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought. Oh, near in California.
California.
Yep. The restaurant.
California.
The restaurant is paying $3 to $4 more.
What?
More per pound of beef than they were previously.
And their customers now paying $3 to $4 more for the burgers, aren't they?
Yes. And she's saying the customers are now complaining, and we're trying to explain that the price of beef is going up pretty quickly and it's affecting business. So the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics said the average price for a pound of ground beef hit $6.12 in June, which is a 12% increase over the past year. And in some stores, higher grade beef is now almost $10 a pound for ground beef. I would like to acknowledge that I'm reading CBS 8. So this is CBS in San Diego, California. Their headline was Meat Lovers Feel the Squeeze.
Wait, well, hold on. Meat lovers feel the squeeze? Do you think they knew what they were doing? Meat lovers feel the squeeze.
I feel like they do.
I love how you feel like you've said something bad.
It feels terrible. I don't know. I don't like it. And all I know is that I had to double check, but this is CBS in California.
Meat lovers feel the squeeze.
That's right. But I would say $9 to $10 for high-grade beef, $9 to $10 a pound seems like an awful lot.
I'm going to say that it is getting, and I know you're going to say, well, don't go to restaurants. Yeah, okay. But we need people to be able to go to restaurants and want to go to restaurants and spend money at them. But everything is expensive now. Everything.
Yeah.
There are no cheap places anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's madness how expensive things have gotten.
And all joking aside, that is why our conversation going back to Ameren and the electric bills being obscene is really upsetting. If you have an electric bill that's generally $120 and suddenly it's $300 or it's $395, that is so significant that is someone's grocery bill. And by the way, the grocery bills are already way higher than they were before. Let's say you're a single mom and you've got two or three kids and you're working and you have your budget down because you know this is how much I need for school supplies. This is how much I need for my grocery bill. Oh my gosh, school supplies, way more expensive. Beef, eggs, milk, way more expensive. And now you get hit with an electric bill that's $250, $300 more than you were expecting. My thing is, you can't do that to people.
You just can't.
You can't do that
to
people.
It is not sustainable, and there will be a tipping point. There's going to have to be. People just can't. They can't do it. It's outrageous to ask them to, and then to say things like, well, we're improving infrastructure, or usage is up, but it's not. You know, you can't do that. And I'll be honest, the answers from Ameren were unsatisfactory. So we're going to talk to Maria Kina, who's been following that story, and she will join us
10:45.
And just as
So we had to adjust with Maria, so she's 10:45 with us.
And Ameren's first quarter results for 2025 were outstanding. They were higher than ever. So again,
That's the thing.
I want companies to do well, but when you're talking $300 or $400 in a surprise monthly charge, this is devastating to people.
Yep.
This changes like, what are we going to eat? You can't play a sport. I can't get your school supplies. I can't fix my car. You need new tires? I can't do that.
If electricity bills go up between 20 and 40%, whatever it is, I better not a year from now hear about how Ameren had record profits. Better not hear about that.
I feel like you might.
Yeah, and it's really bothersome. And I don't know what needs to happen, but I know this is not workable. Mm-hmm. It just isn't workable for most people.
You can't.
Amy Marks Corps, Chris Ranji. It is the trade deadline coming up tomorrow at 5 o'clock, so we're a little over 24 hours away from that. We do believe the Cardinals are going to be active. But when we come back, we're going to talk about the Redbirds with John Rooney, voice of the Cardinals. They do have a game tonight against the Marlins. It's what we call a rubber match. John Rooney next on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Now, the John Rooney Conversation on KMOX. Sponsored by Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance. We are Missouri Farm Bureau Insurance. And if you're a Missourian, we're for you.
Ingram, deep left center field for the right-handed batting catcher, who swings and he loops the ball left center field. That drops in for a hit. That breaks an 0 for 15.
Cardinals tonight series against... the Marlins comes to an end. 5:50 pregame show and a 6:45 first pitch. Also, don't forget that at 5 o'clock is Redbird Rush Hour with Wheeler and Pauly. They're going to talk about the trade deadline, which is tomorrow at 5 o'clock. And they'll also have their trade deadline wrap-up, see what the Cardinals do, because there are a lot of Redbird names that are out there in the ether that could potentially be on the move between now and tomorrow at 5. But tonight, first things first, game against the Marlins. John Rooney, broadcast voice of the team, is with us now. How's it going, John?
It's going fine. Just trying to get packed up and get ready for the road trip as the team leaves after the game tonight.
Yeah, this is an interesting time for all teams in baseball with that deadline tomorrow. And, you know, it's just a lot going on for the Cardinals because you know that they might end up being busy, but also trying to go about business as usual as a baseball team. Is that difficult for them to do?
No, I don't think it's difficult for them to do when they actually get the game time, but maybe, you know, off time where they sit around the clubhouse or they're at home before they come to the park. I could see them thinking about it and that kind of thing, but you know, there's no news yet. And when it becomes news, then we'll really dive into it. But the trade deadline is always an interesting time.
It certainly is. Baseball is always really good with the trade deadline. I think it's one of the more fascinating trade deadlines in sports. NBA can be too, but this is a fun one, I think, for a lot of people.
Yeah, and just as far as the process goes, if someone's traded, obviously, right, the front office, they're doing their wheeling and dealing. The player might not have any idea, right? Like, is it the front office that comes up to the player if they get traded and said,
it all depends, yeah.
This is what happened?
And sometimes a player is informed during a game, and I'm not sure how much of a heads up the agent gets on it. You know, that's all workings that take place between presidents of baseball operations or general managers, agents, and the other teams. There's a lot involved. That's why I say when it is handed to me, that's when it becomes news. And that's when I find it interesting. But it is. It's kind of fun to talk about the rumors and one thing and another. But there are a lot of sports news agencies that are treating these rumors like it's headline news. And a lot of it hasn't happened, and most of it won't happen.
There was an interesting thing, just a quick sidebar here, that happened yesterday. The Blue Jays and Orioles had a doubleheader, and in the middle of the game, well, in between the doubleheader, in between the two games, one of the relief pitchers was traded from one team to the other.
Oh, that's so crazy.
So he just walked to the other side of the building.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy.
That's really funny stuff.
I think that happened to Joel Youngblood in a deal, maybe the Mets and the Expos years and years ago, where he was traded in between games of a doubleheader. That just kind of pops to my mind. But, you know, there are crazy things like that that can happen. But there are teams looking to improve themselves, and they're checking the standings and checking their schedules to see if they do have a realistic opportunity to compete and jump those teams to become playoff teams as wild cards or make a run at the division. And right now it looks like it's a fight between the Cubs and the Brewers. With the way the Brewers have played recently, they put themselves in the driver's seat a couple of games over the Cubs, and Cincinnati has been playing better, and hopefully the Cardinals can put some hits together. But that highlight you played with Pais breaking his 0-for streak, that was about the highlight of the night last night. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it was a 2-0 game, but when they got that third run against Sonny Gray, it seemed like 30-0, and the Cardinals just couldn't overcome it.
They've had a lot of shutouts. You know, they've had a lot of those in the last month, I guess, now, or the offense being shut out. Why do you suppose it's gone this way, John, where early in the year they were one of the better offenses in baseball, at least for the first several weeks of the season?
Well, you have to give the pitcher some credit, and a lot of those games have been line drives hit right to people. And it was a simple matter. The other team found openings. The Cardinals did not. And there are times where they just haven't been able to put two, three, four runners on base in a single inning and get some runs in. And they had two innings last night where they had two runners on in one inning, three on the other. And Sandy Alcantara probably made the best pitch of the night, his changeup, to strike out Burleson. If Burleson gets a big hit right there, may have turned the night around. The margin for error or the margin for a win or loss for this team has been razor thin all year. And they've been able to keep their heads above 500 and be in the conversation for a shot at a wild card spot. And I think that's kind of amazing, finding out just what they need to find out about the younger players. And they've had people hurt, Chris. They haven't had a Nubar in there. They haven't had Gorman in there, who can be a game changer with one swing of the bat. And he was starting to hit the ball better when that back flared up on him. And now both of those guys are out on rehab assignments, and hopefully they can come back and make a contribution. I think that has a lot to do with not performing very well. And you had Herrera out for a good portion of the time, where the Cardinals weren't doing well against left-handed starters. So add it up, and it's what it is. They're out there trying to compete, and they're out there trying to find a way to win. They found a way to score seven runs in game one of the series. They'll try to do that tonight to take two out of three from Miami.
Hey, John, as we say goodbye, I wanted to ask you just any thoughts or interactions you had with Ryan Sandberg. We talked about him yesterday, how even though he was on the Cubs, Cardinals fans, he wasn't hated like they hated the Mets, right? Like, he was generally just really well-liked around the league.
Ryan Sandberg was a good friend, and he was on the first minor league team that I broadcast, the Oklahoma City 89ers, back in 1981. He was the starting shortstop, top prospect with the Phillies. Bob Dernier was the leadoff batter playing center field, and Sandberg his second playing shortstop. And I went out to breakfast with Ryan, first road trip. That was my first broadcast job in professional baseball. We went to breakfast in Des Moines, Iowa, and I did 99% of the talking. Very shy guy, but a very nice person, and a very strong-willed competitor, and you had to be to get all the way to the Hall of Fame the way he did. But he was recruited by Warren Powers, the late Warren Powers, who coached at Missouri when Warren was at Washington State. He had recruited Ryan to be a quarterback for the Cougars, and he decided to take baseball, and that was a great move for Sandberg, who made it all the way to the Hall of Fame. But I had some great interactions with him over the years, and yes, he was a tough competitor, and I think he really helped keep the fuel going in the Cardinals-Cub rivalry for all of his playing time, and it's still going strong today.
Yeah, I liked Ryan Sandberg quite a bit, and so Cardinals fans have an idea of what he was to them, he was their Ozzie Smith. It's just that simple. So, and they played at the same time; they were contemporaries. So, appreciated.
Well, I'm saddened by his passing. Yeah. That's for sure. But and we knew it was coming.
Yeah, very, very well liked. John Rooney will be listening tonight for the finale of the series. Hopefully you'll be calling us a winner. Appreciate it.
Hope so. Look forward to it. Thanks.
That is the voice of the Cardinals, John Rooney. Again, Redbird Rush Hour at 5 o'clock. Matt Pauly, Kevin Wheeler. We'll talk trade deadline for sure. Leading you into the pregame show at 5:50. Then 6:45 first pitch right here. Cardinals Marlins on 104.1 FM KMOX. We have Maria Kina. She's going to come in from the newsroom. Talk to us about what's going on with County Executive Sam Page. And what she has been able to find out about Ameren price hikes and why your electricity bill is through the roof. We will talk to Maria next on KMOX.
Now, Chris and Amy visit with the KMOX newsroom.
Do we definitely know that this is an investigation into the Prop B activity?
We do not know. We have not seen the subpoenas. I've asked for a letter. I've asked the county exec to provide us an actual details of what it contains, and I haven't seen anything yet.
Well, that was KMOX's own Maria Kina at the St. Louis County Council meeting yesterday asking a question about Missouri Attorney General Andrew Bailey's investigation into St. Louis County Executive Sam Page's use of public money on an April ballot proposition. We talked about the Highway Patrol showing up at Sam Page's office on Monday, confiscating his phone. His first statement was yesterday. Maria, thanks for coming into the studio.
Thank you both for having me.
Okay, what do we know or need to know about what is happening right now surrounding the county executive?
Well, I think it's a little tenuous right now. We don't really know what's happening. As you heard, the councilwoman there could not definitely say definitively, yes, this is the investigation about Proposition B, what led up to it. However, today at noontime, she has given the county executive an ultimatum to produce the documents. And if he doesn't do that, I said, now what? What if he does it? If he, you know, just says, no, I'm not going to do it. She says, then they will go for subpoenas then. They will subpoena the records.
But he did, though, the county executive did say yesterday that this was about that taxpayer money, correct? At the county meeting?
He said that he surrendered his phone.
Okay.
He said that he doubts that anyone did anything wrong and that he's cooperating with the investigation. So I don't know definitely that that's what this is, but certainly there's a lot of speculation that that's what it is. The chairwoman, Rita Herdays, when she was, because needless, you know, there's a lot of animus with the county council and the county
executive.
Even
within parties.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The one ally that the county executive has is Lisa Clancy, who is a Democrat. But the other Democrats are not with him, nor the Republicans. And Rita Herdays said, regardless of what this is, good, bad, or indifferent, if we know, if you communicate with us, we can deal with it. Because no one knew. Everyone I spoke with, all the council members, nobody knew that this happened Monday until it came out in the press.
Okay. And so we were talking about that, why he waited until yesterday to say something about it. Does that indicate anything, or is it just, you know, him being as careful as possible?
I think being careful, and his attorney probably told him not to say anything until they coordinated what they were going to say. His attorney, Jeff Jensen, who used to be the U.S. attorney here in St. Louis, President Trump appointment from his first term, the president's first term, and he's now back with Hush Blackwell in private practice, Jensen.
Maria, as you said, nobody knew about the incident with the state troopers at the county executive's office until it came out in the press. Do you know exactly how it came out in the press? What did someone on the inside call the press? Was it the press following what the state troopers are doing? How did they find out?
I don't know. Channel 4 was the first one to report this Monday evening at 6 o'clock. So I don't know where that. I would almost think that there has to be some sort of a leak in there. Now, I did also interview Councilman Mark Harder, who said in addition to the AG, the Secretary of State is also involved in this and investigating it. So, of course, that would make sense because if it involves any kind of anything to do with voting, that the Secretary of State would be involved with it.
Okay. I mean, we'll have to keep following. Here's the thing. Coming on the heels of Steve Stenger, which is the county executive that Sam Page replaced. You know, Sam Page said, we want this administration to have transparency, and we just haven't seen that. We haven't seen that with how much he's working at the hospital, you know, with the hours. He never released that, which I say, if you're on the up and up and you're only spending the occasional handful of hours once a month at the hospital, show the press your hours, which he refused to do. The ARPA funds, when he was connected to a medical system, may have been a conflict of interest. So,
well, I think we should clarify. Mercy Hospital refused to release the records.
He doesn't have the right to explain, to say the hours himself?
Well, I'm sure he could make that decision, but Mercy was involved in this. There was a lot of litigation there, and they fought that for a long time, releasing any kind of records.
Maria, I wanted to move on to the Ameren story that you did earlier in the week, and we heard it and felt like the answers were unsatisfactory from Ameren as to why these price increases are so dramatic, even when usage is not up that dramatically. Any new developments on that, or were you also as unsatisfied as the rest of us?
Well, I think my questions weren't answered because it doesn't make sense. If you're if you just received a 12% increase that went into effect on June 1st, and people's bills are going up 40%, or in some cases, even over 50%, that's not 12%. And I don't think the answer for that was satisfactory. Because, yes, we are going through this heat wave. There is more usage, but that still, to me, doesn't account.
There are always heat waves.
Right. We have that every year. And a lot of people that I've spoken with, customers, have said, well, they said my usage is comparable to last year, so why would it go up that significantly with the 12% increase? I also asked why they thought it was necessary to do the 12% increase. And I should mention, kilowatt hours are more in the summer than they are during the winter months. So why they chose to use that 12% increase, and already knowing that the price of electricity is higher, why would you do that all at the same time and put it into effect in July, which is usually one of our hottest months, July and August? Why not wait till this, September to enact it?
Well, and also their own estimate, and this is from our partners at Fox 2, and of course you've talked to them as well, talked to Ameren, but the utility said that, well, this increase will amount to approximately $12 more per month for the average household. We're seeing people with three and four times the regular electric bill. Mine doubled in an apartment that I didn't even live in.
Mine went over, mine went over 50%. Over 50%.
I have a family members two and a half, like my close family member, two and a half times what it normally is. And then the Fox 2 story again mentioned someone who paid $120 now paid
like $400 something, $460, or that's insanity.
Yeah, and that's what sparked got my attention when I was looking on Nextdoor. People kept on saying, "What's going on with the electric bill?" And I thought, well, maybe it's a fluke. And then I start hearing from more people, and they were all discussing it and saying, you know, my bill was $160 last year or last month. And now it's $440. Yeah. So that's more than a 40% increase. Yeah. And it's certainly more than a 12% increase.
Were you able to speak with anyone at the Missouri Public Service Commission who approved the increase?
I have a call to them. I believe they returned my call this morning because I'm just in now. And also, I've reached out to the Consumer Council of Missouri, who is a group that advocates for Missourians when it comes to utilities. You know, Ameren is a monopoly. It's a regulated monopoly by the Missouri Service, the Missouri Public Service Commission. I think what people need to understand, when they say they're having these public meetings, go to them. Have your voice heard, because that can make a difference. Because trying to say something after the fact or trying to do something, I think it's very difficult. I don't know that certainly Ameren's going to say, oh, yeah, we've made a mistake. Let's credit those bills. I don't see that happening.
How often do they have these meetings? And when is the next one?
Well, we can broadcast live from there.
How do you blow these people up? And I don't mean like actual explode them. I mean like get in their ears so they hear you.
They put out announcements when they are. They don't normally have them on a regular basis. It's only when one of the utilities want to have a rate increase.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of opposition to this. I also put a call in to Senator Carla May. I have not heard back from her as yet. Because she was very opposed to this rate hike. And you know, I don't think people at the time knew necessarily what it was going to translate to. Mm-hmm. And I think Senator May did. She realized just how devastating this was going to be for some people.
Then she realized a truth that Ameren didn't admit if they said for the average person it would be $12 a month.
$12.
That's not right.
No.
Oh, yeah.
It's not.
Maria, appreciate your work on this. Keep us updated.
I will.
That is Maria Kina from the KMOX newsroom. Coming up in, on Friday, actually, is World Without Cancer Day. And Pedal the Cause is a part of this. In fact, making it happen. David Dreyer is the executive director of Pedal the Cause, and he will be in studio with Kui Tran, who is the chef and owner of My Lee and Nudo House. Two really good restaurants here in the St. Louis area, as retailers and restaurants around the area are going to be donating a portion of sales this Friday for World Without Cancer Day. So we'll talk to David and Kui when we come back on KMOX.